all that Rome has done, the atrocities, the cruelty, everything. And now with Israel coming back to where they need to be, then I see it kind of switched.
Yeah, so what it is this basically speaks of like a prophecy, so to speak.
Yeah.
So what happens is Israel, the Jewish people, have in a sense created their own adversary.
Right.
But the adversary that is created will, Israel will bring it to its downfall.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're exactly right. Everything will work exactly against them.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting, if you talk to people in Israel and you tell them how bad, you know, it is for them to have to fight with the present people that they have to fight with, they just laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, if we have to suffer at the hands of an enemy, he said, please let it be the Palestinians. Because they know... It's so silly because they always tip their hand. They always tell exactly what they're going to do. Uh-huh. And so Israel said, well, we'll just pick up...
hanging themselves.
Exactly, exactly. Very good, very good. I think that's a very important thing to see and understand for us on a spiritual level. That just as it said there, you're going to watch her brother, and she's her name is supposed to be Ariana, which is a lion, but we call her Taz for short. Doctor, we should have given her a bath today, and that was...
That'd be an experience.
Okay, very good. I like that. It's a good piece, a good place to read right there. The final section there is a very important idea. Gibret Sheba?
Mine is on the bottom of page 35, where it talks about the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of the paragraph, it says, the amount of data transmitted in a vision of spiritual character is so great that it must be broken down layer by layer.
Correct.
And it just kind of, you play the telephone game, you know what I'm saying? It's like everybody's perspective is different, and then, of course, you talk about the camera and how that was really interesting to me, because you really do have to break it down layer by layer to understand what is being portrayed in the vision.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll probably talk about that a little bit. Sounds like a good thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Mom?
I don't have anything.
You don't have anything?
Okay. I wasn't here.
That's all right. Dr. Elisheva?
Mine is on page 31, where you got it underlined about they were all of one heart and one soul. And with what I've been studying in this book that I've got, that statement has a very, very, it's more than just one heart and one soul. There's a very deep lesson in that little phrase.
Absolutely. Dr. Elisheva and myself, over 20 years ago now, decided that we were going to go to a teaching that was being held in Nashville by two of the synagogues at that time. One was the Temple, which was a Reformed synagogue, and the other was West End Synagogue, and that was conservative. Two rabbis, very good rabbis, very intelligent. But one of the things that impressed us the most about having attended those classes was that there was a tremendous family unity and bond in the Jewish synagogues. That synagogue was very special, and that class was very special because it was held not in the synagogue itself. It was held in a room that was probably about four or five times the size of this room right here. And there were couches and chairs and, you know, it was just a room.
There were prints on the wall,
yeah,
fireplace.
In a fireplace. It was just really, really a very kind of homey atmosphere, and it was a place that we really said we could feel the unity of the people and feel the family unit as a strengthened thing then. So we enjoyed that very much. And it's very, very hard to find this particular attribute of everybody being on the same page with the same goal and trying to accomplish the same thing. So it's not without considerable amount of labor to make that happen. And that's all of us, that's our job. So that's very good, my beloved. Ms. Hava?
I am intrigued by the commentary on Am or Am Haaretz, the people of the land. And I'm hoping you're going to enlighten us a little bit, because I'm curious as to why the people of the land are considered the uneducated. So what would the educated be, and why is there that division distinction?
Okay, the uneducated people were related more to, say, the farmers, to the et cetera, that they were not the educated, and then you can turn the page as to the educated being those that were well schooled in the Torah. Okay, these people generally were not well schooled in the Torah, so this is why it's a great ordeal for Yeshua to make an appeal to these people and be drawing these people in masses back to the Yesnogar, to the synagogue, because then they have to embrace everything that they've, you know, abandoned up to that point. So they weren't really, really Torah observant for the most part, etc. So they called them Am Haaretz, just the people of land. Now the other thing about the Prushim, the Pharisees, what they would do is they would have what they called Chavarim. Now Chavarim is a group of a group that was within their circle. Okay, so they would have people in a circle that they knew that they could trust, that they paid their tithes, they follow halakha, they did kosher, etc. So they formed this little kind of a co-op with one another, so that they knew that they weren't eating treif or otherwise, which was the general. There is a saying that you probably will read and you may have heard before, Galilee of the Nations.
Yes.
Galilee of the Nations, this associates and fits somewhat to the people of Am Haaretz, just people that were not Torah observant by and large.
But the saying originally referred to, not derogatory-wise, but just referred to basically the agricultural class?
No, not necessarily just the agricultural class, but even those that may have come from a different nation, or you have one or two people in Yeshua's list of Talmudim that were proselytes.
Also considered someone that just wasn't a Torah scholar?
No. It's far less than that. Far less than that. And it was a very derogatory term. It was intended to be derogatory. So if you were called Am Haaretz, it'd be not a very nice word to say to someone. Okay. You have to understand that the Galilee is going through a great transformation with Yeshua's presence there. And this we talked about last week or the week before last. It's going through a massive change with him being there. So much so that later on what happens is it becomes the seabed or the bed for the Oral Torah to be birthed out of. The Sanhedrin moved from Jerusalem to the Galilee. And it finally disbanded like 135, 138, somewhere around there in Tiberias. They were in Tiberias, which is very interesting because for the longest time, the Jews would not live in Tiberias because of the graves and things that were there until they could have things sanctioned, etc., to where they knew where the graves were and I don't know how they do that, because even to this day, they don't know where everything's at. But nonetheless. So yes, it was a derogatory term.
Agreed.
Good.
You gotta have farmers. I mean, it's sad.
But it's not really just so much about just farmers. They might have been some people in the group, but it's not just about farmers. Because you could say a farmer, but so what? The guy knew how to count bushels and this and that, so he wasn't totally illiterate. But some of the people that were in those circles, you know, some of them were farmers, and they didn't care about keeping kosher, or they didn't do things according to the way that the Torah told them to, so...
To harvest from the land, you had to tithe from it. You had to get the priestly portion and
exactly.
so forth. And if it's not done, then
it's not kosher.
An infraction.
Yeah, it's not kosher. You're right, Simcha?
This is a little off topic from your comment, but on page 32 with the tax collector,
mm-hmm.
I was always under the impression that the tax collection was for the Romans. But
some
reading, it looks like it's from the Pharisees?
No. It can be the temple tax.
Okay,
which was the half shekel. But it most likely was the Roman tax, okay, which makes him a traitor.
Right.
Okay, so we'll talk more about that.
Okay.
CC.
What about... I can't see that. What is this?
The dislike of the Northern Kingdom.
Yeah, exactly. He's speaking of the dislike between the Northern and the Southern Kingdoms. And very much, I always use the analogy of here we are today in Tennessee, and if they hear someone talk from down here, those guys from the North, then they always...
There are a lot of those.
Where's the majority today? Okay, very good, Clark. Very good. Going well?
What y'all talking about?
That's right.
Amen, Bishop.
Follow me, he says, come and be a trained as a chacham.
Yeah.
So the call wasn't to come and be saved as a priest in Christianity.
Exactly.
It's come up higher.
Right.
And be a person who is training rather than sitting idly by.
Right. I suggested in the commentary that he's sitting there reading Midrash, which is his cup of tea. We all know that we have four levels of hermeneutic, right? Okay. The two that, probably the one that we least talk about here in these classes the most is the Midrash. I guess we'll have to pick up on our Midrash topic. We've been jumping from Remez to Sa'od. No, Randy, you have something?
Nope, I pulled off the wrong one.
All right. Okay, let's go page 30. Now, a couple of things to pick up on. Here, notice again that he is setting. I think, was it last week's commentary we did so much good, or it might be this coming week's. They're all running together right now. Yeah. I don't even know where I'm at. I think it's next week's class we'll talk about setting quite a bit. It mentions here again. Setting in Hebrew has the idea of setting and being on a bench, or the judges, or the judges are in session, would be sitting, and they would be judging. But the same word, and we will see this, I'm sure, next week, is used of the idea of studying yeshiva and having a yeshiva. And you will learn next week that Sanhedrin proper. Sanhedrin was a educational institution as much as it was a judicial institution. So the sitting of the Sanhedrin, especially the Sanhedrin Gadol, was not just about, okay, we're going to judge this case or we're going to judge that case, etc. They were all the scholars, the top scholars of the land, that had been collected into that particular judgment, place of judgment, and they would see and hear cases that would be what we call capital cases, or cases that required some sort of a precedential setting. So if there was a precedent to be set, it was set by a Sanhedrin Gadol, and it could not be overturned. If a Sanhedrin of 23 or 10 or 11 or 3, etc., had made a judgment, the court above it could overturn it. So if there's a court of 3, you get the next court, it can overturn it, etc. But only the Sanhedrin Gadol could hear capital cases. Now, it's very interesting, this idea of setting, and then we have Matityahu, Levi ben Chafli, here sitting at the, or near the tax office, and Yeshua comes and calls for him to follow him. Now, and as Adon Joel pointed out, to come and be trained as a Chacham. It's very interesting because Yeshua now, according to the number that we have counted in Mark's Masorah, Mark's Gospel, he's the fifth of the disciples chosen. So you have five, and Yeshua himself makes
six.
Okay, six signifying the six orders of the Mishnah. Okay, which we talked about a week or so ago, where we talked about the fact that Yehuda HaLevi, or Yochanan ben Zakkai, excuse me, lived in the Galilee, and it was here that the fundamentals of the Mishnah had been laid down, the six orders of the Mishnah. Now, I've said that the reason that, and I said this, I believe, last week, the reason that Yochanan ben Zakkai puts the Shema first in the Mishnah is because either, number one, he learned it in the school of Hillel, or number two, he learned it from Yeshua, and number three, it is possible that in Mark chapter 12, where Yeshua is talking about the grace of all the mitzvot being the Shema, the person who he was speaking with may very well have been Yochanan ben Zakkai. That is my opinion. There is no establishment of fact at this point or at this time. So you can say, yeah, dumb rabbi in Paris said that, so whatever, that's fine with me. I'm not afraid to stick my neck out where it's appropriate. Amen?
Amen.
Okay. Let's go . Everybody understands the idea. Let's, I guess, go back and cover this. Page 30, verse 4 at the bottom said, "Now it happened as Yeshua reclined in his lady's house, many tax collectors and ignorant sinners of the Amharites also reclined with Yeshua and his Talmudim. For there were many, and they made teshuvah and followed him, Yeshua." Okay? So he's with a group of people that can be, their status is questioned, and many things concerning their whole lifestyle is questioned. But here you see that Yeshua is in the midst of them. Now let me tell you something. A couple of weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago, we had a situation where a leper comes into the community. Okay, everybody wants to say, oh, wasn't Yeshua so compassionate with this leper? Baloney. Yeshua was not compassionate toward the leper. If he was compassionate by any means whatsoever, it was, you know, having him stay outside of the community. Now you're clean, just go tell the priest and you know what you're supposed to do. But he was not and would not let the leper come into the community because it was against the Torah. It was would have been a violation of Torah protocols. And so Yeshua stands up and he stops him from coming into the congregation at that time. So what I want you to see out of this, keeping that very same thing in mind, is don't think for 1 second that Yeshua decided to relax all the halacha for the sake of, you know, having dinner with a bunch of sinners. Okay? It's not happening. If he's going to go into this man's house, we can understand what. He has a kosher kitchen. Otherwise, Yeshua's not going to come in here and he's not going to be eating. If there is an idea here that seems to be a little bit of an indication that this could be around Pesach, because he's, what, reclining? Okay, if it is at Pesach, guess what? The place wasn't just kosher. It was kosher. Ultra kosher, whatever you want to say, because this is a time for all the Jewish people. If you might slip up, or if you have difficulty like we have here in Tennessee, etc., and Kentucky, to find certain things that are kosher, certain meats, etc., everything else, I think the girls do a wonderful job. It doesn't have to have a hexer. Everybody understands this. I hope that people are smart enough to know that you don't have to look at a package of peas and see if it has a hexer on it. Please, please, please. Okay, so it's at that time of the year, everyone keeps ultra kosher because this is what we said, you know, the army got the saying from the Jewish people. If it don't move, paint it. And they will carry everything outside, turn it upside down, vacuum it, all that stuff. And it wasn't just spring cleaning either. Okay, so he's in the middle of this house, and we can understand that if he is here and he is reclining and he is eating, then guess what? Well, it hints to Pesach, but more importantly, we understand that it's kosher.
Yes.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. Sitting there eating with these guys, and he's sitting next to Moshe or whoever, and Moshe is eating his karpas with the master or whatever. What if Moshe, this guy Moshe, he's one of the Yamaharets and he hasn't been keeping kosher at home? What's Yeshua going to do?
Call him out on it? No?
No, I don't think so.
No. The only thing that I know that he's going to do, I'll say this, is that, you know, when you get ready to start, you do what? Kaddish. You have the cup, and then you do what? Urchatz. What's the urchatz?
Wash your hands.
Wash your hands. So what do you think Yeshua's going to do?
I'm very sure he follows protocol.
If he follows protocol and he's there and he washes his hands, what problem is Yeshua going to have with it?
Somebody's probably hiding the house.
No, he wrote them all.
Chinese hacking.
Yehoshua is trying to get in. You can find him on the list. Mm-hmm. Okay, so everybody understand? It doesn't matter how sinful this guy is sitting next to him, he'll wash his hands and do what he's supposed to do, and Yeshua's not going to say a word to him. Because guess what? The kitchen is kosher, not Moshe over here. You're not worried about whether he's kosher or not if you're in a kosher kitchen. Now, he can do things that would make it not kosher, such as
Not wash his hands
would be one thing. Now, at this juncture, I'm going to say to you, Yeshua's going to say, wait. I mean, after all, he is the presiding teacher and leader and everything else there. He's not just going to say, oh, well, this guy, you know, he doesn't know anything. No, they're going to use it as an opportunity to do what? What the Passover is all about, and it's mostly educational, and it's mostly educational for?
For the
children.
Children. Okay? So is this guy a child? If he doesn't know what to do, yeah, you treat him not like a child, but you instruct him and say, this is the way that this is done. So the next year, the idea is for the guy to have Pesach at his house. And for him to have made his house kosher, etc. Everybody with me? Everybody understand? It's very important that you stop and think about these things when you start to scrutinize the events. Now, read on. It said, and when the Sofrim, the scribes of the Perushim, the Pharisees, saw him eat with tax collectors and ignorant sinners, Haaretz, he said, they said to his Talmud, how is it that Yeshua eats and drinks with tax collectors and ignorant sinners? When Yeshua heard them, he said to them, he said, they who are strong have no need of a physician. But the ones who are that's missing something. Oh, I'm on the wrong place. The one who are ill. I did not come to call the righteous generous, but ignorant sinners, Amharets, to do teshuva and repentance. Okay, he understands that, you know, there are groups, there are other Pharisees, there are other people. But here, he didn't come just to bring them to a new level, although they are being brought to a new level by his activities. But he came and he said, I'm appealing literally, if you can say it like this, to everyone. A little bit later, you will see in the book of Luke that he does something that enrages all of the other people around him and other leaders. Go to Mark. No, excuse me, Luke. The other Mark. See, Matthew. It's supposed to be Mark. Bible. It's
going to be good. Laser.
Exactly.
What chapter?
Chapter 4. Verse 16. Stuff we got memorized, you know. Now, this needs a lot of unpacking, and we're not going to do a bunch of that right now, but just follow along. And he came, so he came to Nazareth, the city of the branches. Okay, not a place called Nazareth. He came to a place of the Notzrim. Notzrim are the branches. So who would hang out in that city?
The branches.
Yeah.
Those that were connected to the roots and spot.
Okay. So the branches would be a term referring to whom?
Isaiah 11:2.
And you're saying?
This shall spring up from the rod of Jesse.
Okay. So who's hanging out there?
You're
exactly right. But now unpack that.
The seed of David.
Seed of David. Okay? So you see what's being happening here? So the seed of David is in this city. So if you are the seed of David, which was Yeshua's seed of David? Let me ask you another question. Was hello from the seed of David?
Yes.
Think they could have been neighbors?
Yeah.
So you're going to tell me, this is the idiocy of all this business that comes down the line because nobody's got enough intelligence to think for themselves, that Yeshua is in the Galilee and he never saw Yochanan ben Zakkai? He never saw Hillel? Absolutely. Give me a break. So he said, and he came to, and listen now. With what I just gave to you, put this in your mind, and now listen to what's being said. And he came to Nazareth, the city of the branches, where he had been brought up.
That's where he grew up.
It's where he grew up.
That's where he
most likely where his teacher Shimon taught him.
Probably where he had his bar mitzvah too.
Yeah.
Because
very possibly if that did not take place. Well, that needs some unpacking. And as his custom was, he went into the synagogue. Now, throw out the word custom. If you're scribbling notes in the side of your Bible, you shouldn't, but do it anyway. I'm just kidding. If you put in notes in the side there, put out his religious practice. Not just his religious practice, because that's his practice and nobody else. It's the religious practice of all the Jews to do what? Go to the synagogue on Shabbat. And some of these people read this stuff and you're going, what on earth are they thinking? Now listen to this. What we just said a minute ago. It said, and his cousin was, he went to the synagogue and on the Sabbath day, this is actually on the Sabbath days. It's in the plural.
Well,
Shabbatot. He stood up to read. What?
That right there would tell you it's during a festival.
Which one?
I would say Pesach.
Or a fastival.
Or
I think it's fastable. You say he's going to start coming up with some Yoelish.
I don't know, his eyes are real big. What is it?
Yom Kippur. Fastival.
Oh, I got it now. Okay.
We'll wait for it to catch up.
He kind of startled me, and I was like,
"Well,
I was like, what did I do?"
Europeans created Yiddish. Spanish created
Ladino.
Ladino, and we're creating Southerners Union.
You're going to have to come up with better words.
No wonder they're going to hire him up there in Calhoun County.
Yeah. As long as you're one step ahead of the rest, you're still a leader. Okay, now, let's look back into this. So he came to Nazareth where he had been brought up, and as his religious practices or the practice of all the Jewish people was, he went into the synagogue on Yom Kippur and stood up to read. Do you understand how big a significance this is for him to announce the fact that it says Sabbath, plural, three Sabbaths as a matter of fact. Three special days wrapped up in one. Number one, Yom Kippur. Number two, Shabbat. And number three, the Jubilee. He has the distinct honor of giving the sermon et, if you will, on this particular day in front of
everyone,
all the other branches.
May I ask a question?
Isn't it
only once that truly out of all of this, all the history, haven't they only really celebrated it historically once?
Mm. I don't know if I'm ready to go into all that right now.
Okay, but you see where I'm going.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, but do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, and he had to be a member of great standing in the community to be able to do that.
Okay, now listen.
He would have to be the highest scholar. On some services, it would have to be.
Some services would do certain points, yes, absolutely. But he could be picked. You know how His Eminence talks about, you know, how they used to buy the...
The seats.
Huh?
The seats next to the rabbi?
Well, some would buy the seats next to the rabbi, absolutely, and others would buy for the mocteer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That would be the big money, you know.
To be able to say that.
Say the mocteer.
And along with the prophet? So that's what he would be.
This is what he's doing here, and it's very interesting because if you read Edersham, it seems to insinuate that he led the whole service as a kazan, and here operated as the cantor, for at least the prophet Tiferet. Okay, I'm not speaking in code. These are things that, yeah, there are a lot of words going around, but. It's not really code language, so nobody knows what we're talking about. It's a matter of vocabulary. I'm going to just go ahead and go on, but if you start hearing words and you're not sure what they mean, wave your hand. Okay? I know there's a lot of vocabulary. One of the reasons why we use a vocabulary is to get us out of the old thought patterns. Okay, you see what I'm saying? Because if I say grace, you think, oh, if I say chesed, it's a whole other thing, right? You understand what I'm saying? Okay, so he stood up. That creates some interesting situations there to be mulled over. But nevertheless, I say he was among the branches. And this day he operates as the chief branch. And I say there's probably many others at that particular hearing that would be quite distinguished guests. But this may be, and it is one second, please. This may be, as we would think, it's possibly close to or near his ordination. And so he gets this distinguished and great honor to make this announcement.
No respectable Jew would miss Yom Kippur. Unless it was an extreme emergency. I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like going and doing everything. If Yom Kippur was coming, they would see that as whether they're going to be forgiven or not, and they all show up. So, I mean, it's kind of like the Christians show up on Easter. Everybody's going to show up on Yom Kippur. They're not going to miss it.
Yom Kippur and Passover. It's got something that we're mulling over.
Yeah, probably talked about this before, but it may be new to me. Is this where he's going to return to? To the city of Branches?
That... It's not outside the realm of the possibility, but that needs a whole lot of talking about.
Okay.
But it would mean that... if he came out of that city, which is very possible, it would mean a lot of things whatsoever to have to get in that and talk about that. Excuse me. Thank you. Okay, so it was handed to him the book of the prophet Isaiah. Now everybody looks and hunts and tries to figure this out. The liturgy for this particular section was only read on Yom Kippur and only on Jubilee. So it's a part of the Jubilee liturgy, and I think there's corroborating evidence in Cairo Genessa. His Eminence has that research, and so we'll have to ask him where the research is. But he says here, and he found the place where it was written, or where he was supposed to read, And it said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me because He has anointed me to herald the Masorah to the poor, to the sent, to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives. So back here we're seeing that He's not just going to minister to the guys with all the money. He is what? I'm going to proclaim liberty to the captives. So you understand right there immediately that's language speaking about the Jubilee. And the recovery of the sight of the blind and set liberty those who are oppressed and proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord, again, Jubilee. And he closed the book and he gave it back to the Pekid and sat down. And the eyes of all who were in the Asnoga were fixed on him. And he began saying, today the scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. So all bore witness to him, marveling with the gracious words which were proceeded out of his mouth. And they said, is this not Joseph's son? Now you can read that in Peshat and say, this is Joseph's son. But that's not what a Jew would look at this and he would not think he was talking about his daddy. And by the way, when I say daddy, his real daddy, biological daddy, daddy Joseph. Joseph. Okay? So what were they saying? This is Mashiach ben Yosef. Let me tell you this now, and keep this in a mental locker in your head. There are going to be some people who will say, no, they didn't use that phrase until 200 years after or so. Baloney. We have sufficient evidence from a stone called Gabriel's Revelation Stone, and it talks about this 200 years before the Common Era. So it's not one of these things of, oh yeah, they're just saying that because that's going to make Yeshua Mashiach ben Yosef. Forget all that business. And tonight it's like whoever, I don't care which side. The reason is both sides wanted to hide the truth. Right? No. We can't have Yeshua be a Orthodox Jewish rabbi because that won't let Christianity work. And we can't have him as an Orthodox Jewish rabbi because...
And that's what we got to be.
That's what we got to be. We're stuck in the middle. Okay, and it said, you will surely say this proverb to me, etc. And then when he gets done, go down to verse 25. And he said, I tell you the truth, there are many widows in the days of Eliyahu when the heavens were shut up 3.5 years. And so obviously, 3.5 years, it has something to do with the... So windows being shut up meant it was a famine for the Torah. And so Eliyahu was called and sent to a Zarephath for the widow's son who was dead. What was his name? The boy's name.
It ended up being Jonah.
And then he said in Nahum, etc. So all those in the Asnoga, when they had heard this, and I don't think it said all, but I think this is, it may say, in fact, all, pos, in Greek, but I think this does not mean everyone in the Asnoga, because I think there were both sides. I think there were two sides to this story. I think there was those that were, as we saw above, said this is Mashiach ben Yosef. And they were on his side. But I think there were others there in the synagogue who were from the Shammite group saying, no, we don't want any part of this Gentile business. Because this is what he's saying right here, that he's going to send the Masorah or the message of the Oral Torah to the Gentiles as well. So they rose up and they wanted to thrust him out of the city, and they wanted to went to the brow of a hill. This is a perfect place for this scenario, this setting, spot where they were going to do this. So what you see here is Yeshua is speaking about reaching out not just to the elect and wanting to minister to them. If that had been the case, Yeshua could have sat in the yeshiva and he could sit on the Beit Din, which I'm very sure that his father did do, Yosef did do. And he could sit on the Beit Din and he could eventually promoted himself or through his studies and etc. to the place of being on the Sanhedrin Gadol. And we can mark down history and say that he was a great Jewish scholar. But that's not what Yeshua was wanting to accomplish in his life. Yeshua was wanting to make a tikkun, a repair for everything. Sure, I about lost everybody. Huh? Our problem is that Jeremiah 19:17, where is it, says, we inherited lies. Our fathers inherited lies. We inherited lies from our fathers. It's time to stop. And instead of just reading these stories like stories, try to look at the difficulties and see what the difficulties are with what's being insinuated in these texts. Because I'm sure that we've already given you enough at present to say, this wasn't the way I learned it when I was a kid in Sunday school. Okay. Page 35. As we said in the very beginning of class, Mishneh pieces Mark Mordecai is Peshat. Of course, Remez being allegorical, I suggest that if you want to get a good grasp on allegory and at least have a little bit of insight into what it's like, that you pick up a copy of Philo and start reading Philo, and you'll be immersed in allegory right away, remez or allegory. And Nachmanides or Ramban with an N, not an M, is very much remez allegory. Between the two of them, I say they're the masters at understanding allegory. Philo is an Alexandrian Jew, so he is going to be able to pick up on innuendos that were known or determined from the Septuagint. This would not be Ramban's focus. He will be focusing on the Hebrew text, the Masoretic text, or even some of the Targumim, etc., picking up on those and then interpreting from that fashion. So those two levels now being set aside, we move to the next level, which is Midrash. Midrash means metaphor. And the way that a Midrash usually comes out, and this is really, really well seen in the book of Matthew, is in a little story. And so the story is given, and the story is not about, you know, were these literal factual events. It's a story to convey an idea or especially a moral principle. Okay? So you know the saying, the moral of the story is, okay, that comes from Midrash. Okay? And then the other being Zohar, which we've talked about many, many times. But in both of these two sets of the hermeneutic, the final hermeneutics and rabbinic hermeneutics, we have both that talk about the I. And so when we talk about the I, you realize how, and some of you were in His Eminence's class and you heard how he would tell about Shema and the hearing. And so hearing does what? Hearing takes a word and it holds it, and then it takes another word and holds it. It takes another word and holds it, and then it realizes that's a sentence. You do this all together, then you got paragraphs, etc., etc. That's what Shema is. An assembly of words inside your head or otherwise. Everybody understand that? Mm-hmm. Okay, seeing is a whole nother kettle of fish, as they say. Because when you see something, and we say a picture is worth a thousand words. I say that that's a Kabbalistic saying. That's the idea of something Seotic or Kabbalistic. So you can look at it and you can say, well, that's worth a thousand words. How many times have we shown this chart in classes and things to, and everybody can have a...
Two or three, four...
So, you know, if you want to sit here and look at the top, we say we could talk about Chokhmah. Okay. And so we could do what? Thousands upon thousands of words, because we talked about this single little black square that we have in this. But the reason that it becomes so significant is because it's at a particular place on this chart. So if you see this, we start talking about this. And you say, wait, how come it's in that place on the chart? How come it's not over here? How come it's not somewhere else? Okay? And so pictures are like that. The pictures are an assembly, as it were, of images. So if we have the images threaded together, we call it a movie, don't we?
Absolutely. So dreams and visions.
Dreams and visions. Exactly. And so, very much the same way that we unfold things from an allegory is the same thing that we do with vision, dreams, visions, etc. These things that all have meanings. Okay? We've done this 1,000 times. Let's go to the book of Revelation. Now, I understand that this is so old, but this will suffice to work out our idea here and make it to where you can understand it. The revelation of Yeshua HaMashiach, which God gave to him. Wait. It's a revelation, a revealing of
Yeshua HaMashiach.
Jesus, we'll say it that way. God forgive. The Messiah. Okay, so this book, that's what it's about. I'll leave my meat cutter steak now. Which God gave to him. Who got it? Who received it?
Yeshua
received it from God. All right? So the him really should be here, a lowercase h, and it should be that him gave it to him servants. Who's him?
Yeshua
gave it to his servants. These things must shortly take place. And he, again referring to Yeshua, sent. Now I say it this way because I know it's not proper English. You don't have to send me an email. Signified. If by his angel. First thing you need to get out of your head is that it was an angel. It was not an angel, it was a prophet.
It was a messenger.
A messenger, absolutely. But he occupies a position in these particular numbers right here. See, eeny, meeny, miny. How about this one right here in the middle?
Tiferet, Paul?
Tiferet, yes, because Tiferet is the
prophet.
He's a prophet. He's also the guy that talks all the time. He's a Pakeed. A Magid. Okay? Now, this through this angel, through this messenger, the revelation has been handed down or being given to Yochanan. And Yochanan, who bore witness to the Word of God, the Logos of Elohim, and the testimony of Yeshua HaMashiach to all things that he... When he said saw, automatically it put it in the state of infinity. Because how does John, how does Yochanan conclude his gospel? I suppose if all the world were full of books, blah, 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 could never contain all that Yeshua did. Why would he say that? Because he's Saotic. He's speaking in Saotic terms. Here we can relate this idea of seeing and saw again to the Midrash. Because the Midrash, when it's given, is not words sewn together. The words sewn together are now a word picture. And so if we sew all the words together, you should be getting in your mind a picture. Same way if you open up a book and you start reading. It was dark, damp, and rainy on a cold December night. Alright, so you start getting the picture, right?
Without hearing it, you're reading the words, but you're not hearing it.
That's it.
You're creating images.
Exactly. You're creating an image inside of your mind, and this is what Midrash and Saul do. Said, blessed is he who reads, etc. Now let's go page over and let's see if we can find some more stuff to get into.
So then in chapter 2, where it begins to the angel of the church.
It's not an angel.
Right.
The messenger. The prophet of the church.
Okay.
Spokesman of the church. Okay, you have this structure. Forget the upper four boxes here. You have this structure. These are the seven Pakidim. It's interesting because Pakid is the idea of the beginning of this particular Torah Seder. Sit in God visited. It says Pakad in Hebrew. These are Pakidim.
Supervisors,
enablers,
overseers,
counters, all kinds of things. This one here, this guy here, he's the president of the congregation. This guy over here is the Hazan of the congregation. Am I doing this
right?
No,
it's backwards.
Thank you. Okay, this guy over here is Chesed. This guy over here is... See, wait a minute, it's on the right hand. Oh, I'm looking through the paper. Yeah, killing you. Okay, so it goes each of these in the order. This person right here is the in the middle is the prophet, or he's the messenger of the congregation. Let's see. I want to get
this one.
I thought the messenger of the congregation was the Hazan.
He is the. Get down from there. He's not the messenger of the congregation. He's the the embodiment of the congregation. That this guy's the mouthpiece. But he's been in the water. Okay, let's see. Stars. He said, verse 12, and I turned to see the voice and spoke, and having turned, I saw seven menorot, not just a menorah of seven menorot. Okay, you understand what I'm saying?
There were seven of the menorahs.
You have a little emblem on the very first of the page. Okay? So there's seven menorot, and each one of these menorot represent a congregation. Can you see these things now? You're seeing these things in your mind, and you start to see there's seven menorot, seven of these menorahs, and they're together, and Yeshua, Messiah, is standing in the middle. You start to get a picture, right? The problem is that if you don't understand the menorah, hey, Adon Scott, did he buy that book yet?
No, not yet. I don't have that $800 yet.
Well, I was going to borrow it for a couple of days if you did. Okay, so in other words, he's painting a picture of seven menorot, and he's painting a picture of this idea that's on this paper. So he said, and having turned, I saw seven menorot, and in the midst of the seven menorot, one like the Son of Man, clothed with a garment down to his feet, girded about with a golden band, and his hair was like wool, etc., etc. Verse 16, and he had in his right hand seven stars. Out of his mouth went a sharp two-edged sword. Go to verse 19. Write these things which you have seen, and the things which you are, and the things which you will take place after this. The mystery, the sa'od of the seven stars which you saw in my right hand, and the seven golden menorot. The seven stars are the
messengers
of the congregation, or the seven congregations, and the seven lampstands which you saw, or the seven congregations. So now, will you be able to understand this if you don't know anything about stars?
Not a true understanding, but your mind can spend lots of things.
But it'll be fictitious until you truly understand what a star is. Biblically speaking, what a star is. Right?
So you're not talking about Michael Jackson or somewhere else?
Who?
Like that. Michael Jackson or
Elvis,
the star.
A star? I was talking about, you know, those little cereals that you get.
Lucky Star, Lucky
Stars? Oh, I guess they weren't Lucky Stars. Count my Lucky Stars. I've been up and down that sidewalk and seen all them stars. Everybody walks all over them all day long. Now, do you get my point here? If you don't understand the star, if you don't understand the menorah, so these are things that what you should do when you're reading that book, when you're reading even the book of Matthew, you should stop. And you should go, like right here said, and I, John, saw an angel. What's an angel? So you have to stop and build up a vocabulary of symbolic words and what they are, and an understanding of those words before you will ever
really understand it. Because it's just a communications issue. If we don't understand Judaism and have the Jewish vocabulary...
Not just the Jewish vocabulary. I mean, there are entire concepts weaving and in and out of one another and building upon one another here. You think all of these self-proclaimed prophets and etc. understand what's going on here? No, they don't.
So much so that everybody takes this book and says that it's literal. It's not literal. The very same way that Daniel, the angel was coming to Daniel, and what did he say? Daniel had been fasting for 3 weeks, and what did the angel say?
He had been dispatched.
I'd have been here sooner, but there was a little trouble in
the Prince of Persia.
No,
the Prince of Persia. The Prince of Persia was keeping him from coming.
And he said, now I've got to go back and help Michael. And you understand the Prince of Persia, that's where he was at, right? Why was there such a big contest over getting the message to Daniel? Because he was in Persia, and that is underneath the domain of another star. Right? So here comes Michael. What's Michael's primary occupation?
He's the
guardian of Israel.
Israel.
He's not in Israel anymore, Toto. He's in Persia. So the Prince of Persia, this angel, this intermediary, says, well, wait. You gotta have permission, boys. You just can't come into my turf and do whatever you want. Mark says,
oh,
we'll see about
snap.
This.
Okay. I got it now. Okay. That's like mind blowing for me. Because I never put that together. Because wherever Israel was, that's where they're... Okay. I'm so excited I can't put it all together. I mean, I can't spit it out.
You could see it, but you can't say
yes.
It.
Yes.
Well, why did Ezekiel see the Merkabah? Because he was not in Israel. And he said, you know what? God's throne is mobile. It can go wherever we're at.
I don't know, man. I mean, my mind is racing now, seriously.
Okay. So I hope that, you know, I've not delved deeply into all that we have said here in this, but the idea is to get you to the place to understand that the text is not words, more words next to other words, etc. Okay? It means for us to slow down. I know you have the whole Torah Seder to study. I know that. And I'm not trying to get you to not do that. I told Gibran Zahava years ago, don't read the Nazarene Codicil. And the reason was is because we needed to have a foundation in Torah first. Now, when you have a Torah foundation, you can turn to the Nazarene Codicil and say...
and begin to put it together. But that was the best advice I ever had anybody give me, because I did quit reading the Nazarene Codicil. And I gained a lot more knowledge, concrete knowledge, by just doing what you told me to do.
Let me tell you to do it again. Just kidding. Okay, so let me ask this one question and make this one final statement. You understand that Mattathiah is possibly in this situation it's no wonder that the Pharisees hated him as a tax collector so much. He's like the IRS, but a Jew working for the IRS. What's worse than that?
TJ's
working for the IRS.
Is it because he collected for the Romans? Because you had tax collectors
If that is the case, if that is the case, and we're not given all the details.
Okay.
If that were the case, then so be it. I suggest here Yeah, he's quote taxing, he's taking taxes, etc. But his real desire is not to be here doing this, collecting taxes. He's studying Midrash. He wants to study Midrash. That's his whole ordeal. So when Yeshua comes and said, follow me, he understands that he is saying to Matityahu, he's saying, look, come with me and you'll understand the Midrash because you have a limitation of trying to do it by yourself. You need someone to teach you the Midrash. Now, I'll say one other thing and I close with this. You remember in John 1 and 50? Let's go there for a second. Is that in the New Testament? Verse 50?
Which chapter?
1. Yeshua said unto him, we'll read verse 49. Nathanael answered and said, well, let's see. Verse 48. Nathanael said to him, how do you know me? And Yeshua answered and said to him, before Philip had called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. What does that mean?
All right, now read it again.
She was selecting Nathanael.
Right.
And he said, he said, how do you know me? He said to above, he said, behold, an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. He doesn't say that haphazardly. He really means it, and there's a reason for this. He said, look, he said, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. We're not in Peshat, Toto.
No, isn't it a reference to, I'm probably totally wrong here, Jonah comes to mind, sitting under the fig tree.
Jonah was mad.
That's all I got.
He said right here, he said, behold an Israelite in whom there is no deceit. He's paying a pretty high honor to this guy. And then he says, you know, before Philip called you, I saw you underneath the fig tree. If you want to understand what just been said, you need to understand what?
What the fig tree.
Fig tree
you need to go to the supermarket and buy some figs and sit and think about this for a while. But you have to know what the fig tree is. If you don't know what the fig tree is or what it represents, what are you going to come up with?
Is that basically like saying the house of seeds?
No.
Then what does that mean? Look,
the fig tree is a symbol of the Yemot HaMashiach, the days of Messiah. He said, I saw you. That's, you can't say I saw you in the future.
Maybe he knew him before.
So he saw the spirit, he saw inside him, he saw the spirit that the two of them, when they were in that realm, were associates, friends, etc. And now I see you again. But he isn't quite on that level of spirituality that Yeshua is, because he can't quite remember it. Because an angel smacked him on the mouth and made him forget.
I hate it when they do that.
Yeah.
Me too.
Have I made my point?
Yes.
You can't read and not have the keys to what you're reading. If you don't, it'll just be words on a page. And everybody will get up when it's time to give their pretty little lecture, and they'll say whatever they want to say, what they want to say, based on how they interpret these things, rather than take the time to learn how they should be determined, etc. Comments or questions?
Is there a question on the screen?
Huh?
Is that a question?
No. who was spoken of Galilee of the Nations.
Yeah.
Okay.